Hello, everyone. I'm Adam. I'm an alcoholic. Can you hear me? Okay. Really good to be here. I'm grateful to be sober. I'm happy to be alive. I don't say it lightly. Stats. I came into AA in 1988. I think I was 20. Close to it. And I didn't stay. I came, I saw, I said, this is full of shit. Well, I didn't know of any young people's meetings, so you guys are really lucky. And if anybody is out there questioning whether they're an alcoholic or an addict, I'm not one to say, but I will say that you don't get here by accident. You don't just, you know, at least I never did. And I wasted a lot of time trying to do it my way and figuring shit out on my own and a lot of wasted time. And if pain had anything to do with learning quick, I'd have got it in like 1988. Nothing to do with it. Can't scare an alcoholic. And pretty much got to learn from your own. At least I've always had to learn from my own experiences. Fortunate and unfortunate. So, 88, I came. You know, I had to do things my way. People were talking about, I spilled more than you drank. And, you know, you don't know how much I drank. I qualified to be here, you know, in like 1983, you know, when my mom died. And instead of like embracing my family and dealing with that situation when it happened, because they all had open arms, I was like, big middle finger, went to the bodega, copped a couple of Ballantine ales, and that's how I did it. That's how I coped with it. And that's how I coped with everything. Like, once, it's like school was out, you know, I grew up in the 70s, so I was exposed to sex, drugs, and rock and roll way too early. You know? So, you know, every time I drank, I pretty much got in trouble. Now people say, like, you know, I didn't get in trouble every time I drank, but every time I drank, you know, every time I was in trouble, I was drinking. I got in trouble almost every time I drank, you know, almost every time. Fights or, you know, in trouble. Arrested when I was older. It's always up to no good mischief. Only child. Bounced between L.A. and New York between my parents until my mom died. Stopped going to school in the eighth grade, graduated to the ninth, and just took my GED. But what happened when I came into a meeting, you know, is what they used to tell you, they used to say it a lot. They would say, you know, AA ruins your drinking. And for me, when I say drinking's like, alcohol is the umbrella I did my drugs under. If that makes any sense to anybody. And it ruined my drinking. And I didn't know. Like, I didn't trust anybody. So I couldn't ask people, like, a question. Like, well, what's this about? Like, what's that book about? Like, is there another meeting? I was so, like, introverted and just so in my head. Even if I was wild and out there and doing whatever I was doing, it was always in my head. Could never escape it. And I didn't have enough, whatever it is you need to ask questions, ever. I just try to figure it out on my own. It's still something I struggle with. But, you know, coming to a meeting, it ruined my drinking and it ruined everything else that goes along with it. And I started chasing, recovery. I didn't really know that's what I was doing, but I started chasing recovery in the form of reading books on Zen meditation and Buddhism and, you know, meditating, exercising, you know. I was in the wave that started breakdancing, but it shifted from, like, roller skating to breakdancing at the roller rink to just breakdancing, b-boying. I wrote graffiti on trains. I still write graffiti. I'm an artist. I'm a painter. I do street art, and it's what I love. I love that. I love life. I love AA now. But it took me a long time to get there, and it took me a really long time to figure out what I like. And I've had periods of sobriety, dry time. Some was good, from 1988 till now. You know, the first one was 90 to mid-92. I accumulated 2.5 years. And some life situations happened that I was unwilling to talk about, and I couldn't ask for help. You can't save your ass and your face at the same time. So, you know, I was so worried about my face, I kept getting kicked in the ass by myself. You know, I'm my own worst enemy. And then I came like immediately back and got a year white knuckling it, and then went out on a tear, and then spent the next 8 years in and out of Florida. I figured I'll do a geographical, go to Florida, because there's no drugs in Florida. You know, it's like the early 90s, and I was just like, you know, later, it's like, that's where all the pirates go. That's where all the drug addicts, that's where all the gangsters, that's where all, like, it's just where the pirates go. And I fit right in. I was in South Beach, Miami. And it was, you know, once you're in. So it was what it was. So the next 8 years was just like chasing my tail. I met a girl at an NA convention. She asked me for a light. I told her I was going to marry her. She's like, F you. She goes, you have that stupid Brooklyn accent. I can't stand it. And we got married. And tortured each other for the next year or so until we kind of parted ways. And, you know, it's just, I got a lot of stories like that, you know. But catch up, you know, I had in 2000, I was always getting arrested, just stupidness. I wasn't a mastermind criminal. I was just, you know, a drunk and a drug addict that had bright ideas when I was loaded and would usually get me in the jackpot. But this situation was, I had a car accident and hit the gas instead of the brake because I was out of my mind. So I hit the people in the car again. The cop convinced them that it was, I tried to kill them with my car, and I was facing 6 felony assault charges, attempted murder, among like a few other things. And I was sitting in Brooklyn House of Detention for a couple of weeks, like, I didn't have any money, so I had a legal aide who was, you know, completely useless. I was like, why am I facing all this time? Did I kill somebody? And she just couldn't answer me. So I copped out and did, like, this drug program. I went to Samaritan Village, and I did, like, this 5-month thing there. Came out, and, you know, it was, like, 10 months total. And it was a Friday. I had no program. I was just kind of going, you know, to an occasional meeting, hanging out with people I shouldn't be hanging out with. It was a Friday. I got paid. I was supposed to go to work the next day. I convinced myself I'm going to get one bottle of vodka because, like, it's not about a drink. I'm not going to go to a bar and socialize and have a drink. I wanted a bottle of vodka. I copped it. I got a phone call, the guard shot, I always got guard shots. And my buddy that I was in there with called me. And I couldn't tell him, you know, I just bought a bottle of vodka, you know, I had a pocket full of money. And I was about to, like, throw it all out the window. And I have 2 kids. Back then I had 1. And I had a place to live. Because, like, the other thing is, when I would pick up a drink or a drug, I had, like, a crazy Eddie sale. Everything must go. No value on anything. All I cared about was alcohol and drugs, and that's how it would go until I got arrested or was, like, you know, just kicked out and running amok and chasing my tail. And yeah. So I got all these good things back in my life, like, you know, a car, a chick, a job, some money, my kid, place to live, and I None of it mattered. None of it. And and I was supposed to do a year in jail if I picked up again, because it's already been a couple of times that I did it. None of that mattered. None of that kept me from picking up that drink. And once I picked up the drink, my money was counted. I was going to the cop, man. I was going to get what I needed to keep going. And it was like a 7 or 8 day run. And I wound up in the middle of it. I threw my hands in the air and I just said, help me. Like, mom, God, whoever, whatever, help me. And I wound up, don't know how, my PO's doorstep on Remsen Street, watching the sun come up, hitting the Statue of Justice on Court Street, drinking a hot stolen beer. And that's like when the miracles started happening. She didn't violate me. She put me in Arms Acres for 28 days. I did that. I came out, and I did this as suggested for the first time ever. Right? So I go, I come out, I start making meetings. I get a home group. I get a sponsor. I made every meeting I went to a commitment. I went early. I stayed late. I took it really seriously. I worked my steps. I stayed away from women for the better part of a year. And I got the results you get when you do this as suggested, right? And it was a 13 and a half year run. I picked up about 4 months ago. Last summer I picked up. I stopped about 4 months ago. And there was like a lot of those years were really good. You know, 13 and a half years is a long stretch. It's a long stretch by any standards. But what happened was I got really complacent, and I started putting emphasis on things other than sobriety and my God, you know, my higher power. I used to call him Yui, universal energy, because I wanted to be cool and I didn't want people to think like I was one of those God people. But I always had a strong, you know, belief in, I knew there was something. And I call God, God now, because God is God, no matter what you call it. My boy Clay calls, you know, I pray to Satan, you know, because you could say whatever you want. You could say you pray to whatever, but he really doesn't. Yeah. And, you know, it's not a bad thing to believe in. But those are the things that I stopped believing in. I got deep into meditation. I was running with Dharma punks. I was doing that thing. And then I started compromising my values and my integrity. And I'll share it with you how, because everybody I speak to does it, or like most of the guys I know do. But like, I don't need Viagra, but I started taking Viagra, you know? And you know, I'm sure there's people out there that can identify. And I had a script for it, because pretty much any doctor will give you a script for Viagra. And it's fun, right? But this is my story. So this is where things kind of went south. And I was trying to fill that God-sized hole with everything but God. Like, I was making money, so I was trying to fill it with material things, buying stuff. At one point, when my business was, I had like 6 cars in Park Slope, so I was playing, and a couple of motorcycles. So like, I didn't have a yard. I was playing the alternate side of the street parking game with like 6 cars and a couple of motorcycles, which is fucking retarded. But we're crazy. We're crazy. So there's the compromise in my values and you know, where I started just, you know, loosening up and letting things be what they'll be. And then it was a couple of years, and, you know, I took a job managing a building so I could paint more. And then I couldn't focus, because I thought it was like, you know, I need some Adderall because I qualify for that too. I'm fucking scatterbrained. My circuits are fried. And I got a prescription for Adderall. And that's really where things went south, because my thinking was totally, totally backwards. And I told you I was already filling that God-sized hole with material things, with women, like multi-relationships, and just like running amok and, you know, doing what we do when we're, you know, instincts run amok. So anyway, the Adderall thing kind of really went bad, and I got a bright idea. I figured, I'll sell drugs, right? because why not? You know, and all this time I'm still making meetings, and I got a good job, and I'm still painting, and I'm selling work, and I'm, you know, things are starting to bubble. But, you know, I started selling drugs, and then, of course, a monkey can't sell bananas for long because eventually you're going to want to eat the bananas. You can take that any way you want. So, so of course, I wound up taking a dive and picking up. But I had already picked up. I mean, you could call it what you want. You know, but you know when you're doing dirt. And the only person you really have to be honest with is yourself. And I could just, delude myself and lie to myself and believe my own lies. Because I had narrowed it down to just, like, me. It went from, like, this big circle of people that I surrounded myself with, all positive people doing positive things. And I stopped messing with everybody. And it was just me, doing my thing, not letting anybody in. No real connection to a higher power. Occasionally meditate. I thought I was having a heart attack. My blood pressure was off the Richter scale, and it wouldn't go down because I was like smoking crack on Adderall, like drinking my. I was like drinking a gram of Molly like twice a day because I'm an animal, right? And I would smoke crack until you just can't smoke it anymore. And it went with drinking too. Like I just constant. So I thought I was dying. So I think the only thing that stopped, I was definitely going. I started meditating and I brought my blood pressure down. But like, I was like, oh yeah, that shit really works. But pretty much insane. And not, I think I told one person like what the real deal was. And I'm just doing my thing. You know, wouldn't let anybody in. Couldn't ask for help because I had 13 and a half years. You know, people, like, I brought so many people in. Like, I did so much work. Anyway, all that's worth nothing, you know. So what wound up happening, this is how it all stopped. Like, no matter what I did, God always wound up grabbing me, and I wound up back in AA since the beginning. Like, no matter what I did, I always wound up back in the rooms. I was like, oh no, get back over here. This is where we need you. Come back. We need you here. And I never say I'm not supposed to be here. And then I hear that all the time. And that's bullshit for me. Because if I wasn't supposed to be here, there were like, you know, a couple of dozen times where, yeah, that bullet wouldn't have hit me there. It would have hit me there. Or like, you know, I would have died then. Or I would have died then. But I'm here because I'm supposed to be here. Just like we're all supposed to be here. Wouldn't be here otherwise. You know, people die every day. So anyway, I was ripping and running and doing my thing, my way, and getting my results. I was in a lot of pain. I had beautiful people in my life, a lot of potential, and I was full of resentment. I was hating people. And like I've hit people in recovery. They deserved it, but you're still not supposed to hit people because I got a bad name, and I felt, and I had to make amends to him like almost immediately, like because we make direct amends, and 10-step, and yeah. So things were good, and I was just so full of resentments and fear. And all that stuff poured on top of it. I was at the end result was I was that. I think I was drinking all day. I was smoking crack. I ate some Xanax to calm down because I had a show that night in Jersey, an art show. And it was probably about 4 hours to buffer. Then I went to the show. I came home. My chick went home to Harlem, and I had the bright idea, like, I'm going to go uptown. So I jump on my motorcycle, and I wasn't, like, well, of course I was high, because the way I use, like, I was never not high. I was like, it would have taken, like, you know, a 7-day detox to clean me out and keep my mind straight. So I hop on the bike and I go uptown, and at 120, right before 125th Street, I lost control of the bike because of the road and or whatever. And I went down, and I guess at 3:30 in the morning, I was probably doing about between 60 and 70 miles an hour because I was blown by traffic. And, you know, everything went matrix. Everything slowed down, and I was watching my handlebars hit the tank on my motorcycle. And I sat, it was slow, and I looked, and I was like, this is not going to end good. And right, as soon as I thought that, it just went into fast mode, and the bike fell on my leg, and it snapped it, and we slid, and it hit a guardrail and bounced away. And thank God, like, somebody pulled out behind me and blocked me from getting run over. And he came out of the car and he said, Bobby, I'm calling 911. And I looked down, and the bone was sticking out of my leg, and blood was squirting out, and my right foot was in my lap. And I was like, fuck, help me. And he turned around and goes, I'm calling 911. So it was like a horror scene. And, you know, I took my sneaker off. I pulled my late, like, I was clear. It was like laser thought, bang, this is what I need to do. So I pulled my sneaker off, took the lace out, tied a tourniquet. Cops were there quick. The ambulance came. They found my phone. Meanwhile, like, the cops pulled up. I had it under control. They were just looking at me like, that's pretty fucked up. And the adrenaline was pumping. I called my chick. I told her what happened and where we were going. And she met me at the hospital, and then I went out. I was like, I'm letting go. Like, because it was so intense and it was so much, and I was so tired and I lost so much blood and the adrenaline was leaving, and I just looked at her and I was all right. And when it happened, right, I got the white light experience. I got that thing that they talk about when people, like, you know, either get real close to death or die and they see the white light and everything's cool, calm, and you're clear and everything's at peace and everything's just cool. You're good. And I was at Clay's art show just before, and I was talking with a guy, and he said, what happened? And I told him, and he told me his story. He had, like, a jugular cut, and the same situation. He went out, and, like, there's some, you know. So basically what happened there is God gave me a second chance. He, like, woke me up, gave me a bitch slap. He's like, oh, yeah, you won't slow down? You're too good for this? Let's break you up a little bit and teach you some patience. Let's slow you down. So at the hospital, when I told her I'm letting go, you know, this is all told to me. You know, they went to work. They brought me back. And then they stuck me in a coma for a week to do work on me and then brought me out and whatever. So I was in the hospital 6 weeks. I had, I think, 8 operations so far. My leg is laced with titanium. Some of it's come out so far. It doesn't bend all the way. You know, like, the things I really used to love to do are just challenging now, but they're doable. It hurts all the fucking time. I won't take painkillers. Like, I came out of the hospital and I threw away the oxys and the roxys because I'm like, this is not going to work. You know, I'm justified. Like, you hear, like, I know how people go out behind that. Like, I don't need to. I want to smoke crack. I don't want to fucking take oxys and roxys. I want to, like, drink and smoke crack. You know, and Molly. I'm just retarded at my age. But the only thing I'll take for it is Tylenol and Advil combination that works for any type of pain. Like, if you're in pain, Tylenol and Advil. You know, I throw away my script for Percocet and oxys. So it hurts all the time, so it's a constant reminder. And, like, you know, warming it up in the morning and getting, like, I meditate now. I'm back to meditating in the morning. And this is what it took. This is my story. This is what it took for me to get back to basics and dig my head, not be a jerk, and, like, you know, get back to God. So I meditate in the morning and I do healing meditations for my leg, for myself, and send out to the world. I think I've always, I mean, since I came in 2000, this time, I've always prayed on meals. I just say thanks. You know, I keep a conscious contact. You know, I work the steps daily. You do the steps daily. If you're living and you're sober, you do all the steps every day. I mean, you formally do them. I formally did them. But now I live them. Here's a tip. I set this phone. It's a smartphone for stupid people, you know, because I can't fucking remember to breathe. I don't know anybody, and none of my friends can remember to breathe either. Everyone I know is shallow breath. Everybody breathes like, looks like they're in a panic. So this thing goes off. I set it to go off every hour on the hour from the time I wake up, which is now 9 o'clock, until I go to sleep at like 11 o'clock. And every hour it goes off and it reminds me to take a breath. Actually, it reminds me to take 3 deep breaths, because 3 concentrated deep breaths is enough to slow you down and reset. If you know anything about meditation, you would know that. And now you do. So it goes off, and like in the morning, it says, "Good morning, Adam." You know, take a few deep breaths, set the tone for the day, and enjoy it. Right? It's not that deep, you know? And throughout the day, it says different things. Remember to eat, because I forget to eat. It'd be like 6 o'clock. I'll have like a pot of Bustelo coffee, and I'll just be painting all day. I get lost in myself doing whatever I'm doing. So it reminds me to eat. Tell somebody you love them. They're special. You know, call some people. So I don't know if anybody wants to do that, but it's definitely been an asset in my recovery. Simple for me now. I jump started my meetings. I've been going, you know, I never stopped really, but I'm present now. You know, I don't know if anybody knows who Eckhart Tolle is. Dig that man. And that corny voice of his. But he's so spot on. Like, AA is religion's greatest hits. It's like a gumbo of all the things that, you know, Bill was bright-lighted to accumulate and put in his books. Eckhart Tolle, I believe, is very similar in his teachings. But basically, you stay in the moment and the right now, because, like, if it was 5 minutes ago or it was 5 years ago or 5 million years ago, it's all the same shit. It's gone. Never going to get it back. You know? Time is more precious than gold. Like, what are you doing with yours? And it's free. Like, I don't want to waste time anymore. I wasted a lot of time chasing my tail when I could have just come in here in 1988. You know, if I had the ability to listen, you know, I wasn't blessed with it or ask any questions. And who knows how things would be. But that means nothing, because all any of us have right now is right now. Take that for what it's worth. Do with it what you will. I keep my program simple. I mean, we're all pretty smart people. Like, we're all above average. You read the book, you get the gist. It's about doing it. So when I wake up in the morning, if I pray, I feel better than when I don't. If I meditate, I feel better than when I don't. If I go to a meeting, I feel better than when I don't. It ain't that fucking deep. You know what I mean? This stuff is really simple. So, you know, find out what works and do more. Find out what doesn't and try to do a little less. I think I'm done. Thanks.